Good evening, everyone. It is 6 p.m. on Tuesday, January 25th, 2022. And this is a work session.
One battery.
Okay.
That's me.
Better plug it in, Steve.
We'll keep rolling it. Now it's canceled. So, all right. This is a work session for the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska. Kim, could I please get you to call the roll?
Yes, Assembly Members David Powell.
I'm here.
Okay, Morrison.
Here.
Gilbert. Here. Ryan Howe.
Here.
DeBoard. Dalrymple.
Here.
And Mayor Prasanka.
And I'm here as well, too. Tonight's work session is to go over the fiscal or financial position of the borough with the finance director, Mason Bowarma, and to go over some information and strategy and planning from kind of a 10,000 foot level. So with that, Jeff, I don't know if you have any opening remarks for the assembly before we turn it over to Mason.
No, Mr. Mayor, it's all Mason's show here.
All right, Mason, take it away, please.
Yeah, great. Let me share my screen here. Hopefully you guys can see me. Can you guys hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
Yes.
Let me just pull you guys open so I can see you here. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Assembly. And thanks, Mr. City Manager. Really appreciate you guys carving the time out tonight to kind of provide a fiscal update. You know, I think this is really timely considering we're kind of entering the budgeting process. And you know, my hope is this is educational for you guys and informative and from a policymaking perspective, as I anticipate you guys probably have quite a few important decisions in the next 4 to 5 months. So again, appreciate your time tonight and definitely please ask any questions you have throughout each of the modules. I got quite a bit of material here, but just encourage you guys to ask as many questions as you can. So with that, we'll just get rolling. Can you guys all see the full screen? It's not cut off or anything? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight we're going to kind of talk about fund structure. This is a question that Patty kind of prompted that the rest of the assembly should benefit from. So kind of talk about fund structure and how to set up an ACCI fund, talk about our asset overview and investment code a bit. The heart of tonight's presentation is more on the health of our enterprise funds. Really want to guide you guys in policy decisions tonight. I know that you guys have asked for kind of a presentation on the enterprise funds for quite a while. I think you guys will be really surprised on some of the enterprise funds. So I'm excited to present those numbers tonight to you guys. A little bit of a sales tax performance update. Prior year, last fiscal year, first quarter of fiscal year 22, just provide those updates. Utility and harbor accounts receivable update. SRS is something I threw in here last minute. Kind of in our conversations with the school and with the joint meeting with the school coming up on March 7th, I thought it'd be good to kind of give you guys some scoop on the SRS fund and the National Forest receipts. Kind of a budget timeline that me and Jeff have kind of produced and want to stick to this budgeting cycle and get an early start on things so we're not scrambled and disoriented in June and we can produce a really good product we can use for next year. And then just kind of a questions, and if there's time, I'd like to talk a bit about the accounting software we use. So first things up is overview of the fund structure. So kind of looking at fund structure, we kind of have two types of overall funds. We got funds that represent governmental activities on one side, and then we have funds that represent business activities. And those two are accounted for differently in our accounting information system. More generally, the general fund, that's going to house all our governmental activities. This includes administration, the clerk, assembly, finance, fire, police, corrections, public safety, et cetera. You can see those on your screen. Another way of thinking about governmental activities are like non-voluntary transactions that occur with citizens. So essentially these are activities these services are enabled to be provided by tax revenue. So that's why we call it a non-voluntary exchange, whereas our enterprise funds or proprietary funds are, there's an exchange of service. So that's why we account for them differently. Then we have special revenue funds, of which we have seven, transit tax, sales tax, parks and rec, Nolan Center, permanent fund, SRS, and the CARES fund, which will be fully extinguished in 21. And then here's our business activities right here, the enterprise funds. We have municipal light and power, or the electric fund, the water fund, sewer fund, sanitation fund, and the port and harbor. Debt service fund, that's going to house all our governmental activity debt, which includes any general obligation bond, of which the city has no general obligation debt currently. We just have those two water and sewer revenue bonds. So, and then capital projects, those are industrial construction fund and residential construction fund, and as well as any miscellaneous capital project funds. So that's kind of a simple kind of breakdown of our fund structure. Here's kind of a hierarchy of how the funds are set up. That might be a bit small, so let me know if you can't see it, but essentially, you know, here's kind of our governmental funds on this side. Here's our proprietary funds, the enterprise funds, and we account for these separately. Believe it or not, this is a really simple breakdown of what our accounting information system looks like. I could scroll for 30 seconds and not even show you guys the full set of funds that was created in AccuFund. So this is kind of how things are consolidated on our financial statements. But I can kind of send this to you guys for review later. But one comment I'll make, and this was a question that Patty asked, was kind of lending of money back and forth between funds. And so when we lend money from the general fund to an enterprise fund, so from here to like water, for example, that's going to prompt an interfund loan. These aren't usually healthy transactions to engage in. You want enterprise funds to support themselves fiscally, although we know that based off of past performance that may not be a way to pay it back. So the general fund may offer a gift to an enterprise fund, but we don't want to get in the habit of that, just because fiscal sustainability is the goal for each of the funds, and you don't want to have too much cross-sharing. There was also a question about sales tax, the sales tax fund, when we transfer money, for example, to like the sanitation department for our bailer. That's something that should be paid back, and if it's not, then it needs to be memorialized by an amendment. So I think we're due for that for our bailer project. So that'll be a decision the assembly would kind of want to make here in the future. So that's it on fund structure. You guys have any questions there at all, or you want me to keep moving on?
Anybody have any questions for Mason? So Mason,
yeah.
When we did the Baylor project, those funds came out of the sales tax fund. Yep. And there is a provision within the sales tax fund for sanitation and safety, correct?
That is correct. So our total sales tax on an annual basis is allocated 68% to the general fund, 28% to health, sanitation, and education, and 4% to streets. So they're allocated to three separate buckets, which then are allocated to separate causes.
So my question is, if I remember correctly, this was presented to the assembly as the Baylor was a part of sanitation. And so that this going to this well for water was appropriate. Is it your take that perhaps that was more of a loan than it was appropriate use of those funds?
Yeah, no, I do interpret it that way, because this is basically our sales tax is a special revenue fund that we then allocate, but we're allocating that to other governmental activities. So sanitation, health, and education should be allocated to other funds within the general fund or the special revenue funds. When you're taking sales tax money and allocating it to the sanitation fund, for example, you're taking governmental revenues and applying them to proprietary funds, which, you know, that's generally not a great habit to get into. And so when I was talking to Mr. J. Bush about this, that's something that he always paid back. Of course, you could gift it with an amendment, but that's my interpretation. Yeah, Steve.
Thank you. So that was great, the assembly then. That line was definitely blurred. I remember the sales job very clearly, which was, well, and this is sort of like, this is a sanitary thing, and so this is all good. And in my mind at the time, I went, yeah, that makes sense. But now that you're saying it, proprietary funds are responsible for themselves. They can borrow, but they cannot just be gifted. So that's great. Thank you. We'll make note of that.
But they can be gifted You just don't want to make a general habit of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep, that's correct. Thank you. Okay, asset overview and the investment code. So if you remember when I kind of first started this role, I kind of provided you a spreadsheet kind of like this on a piece of ledger paper. So here's that balance as of 6/30/21 for all our assets. And then this was as of 12/31 or calendar year end. And so this is just a snapshot of all our assets. So we have several different accounts. We have checking accounts, we have operating investments, we have the permanent fund. And so this is kind of just the changes that have occurred. Some notable changes that have occurred. We transferred $10 million from our general operating account and we kicked it down into AMLIP. So you'll see that those balances fluctuated there. AMLIP, obviously the low interest environment or low interest rate environment hasn't prompted a whole lot of investment income out of that account yet, but this is really a way for us to safe hold money in that AMLIP account. It's all FDIC insured, whereas in our general operating account, it was only insured to a certain capacity. So this was a good move on us, and it puts us in a good position to transfer to capital projects or reinvest in some other ways. You'll also note that the HRA account increased a good amount. That was me transferring it over 50 grand in November, and I'll kind of explain a little bit about that tonight. And then you got our operating capital accounts down here. We have one with APCM and one with UBS. And then the investment committee is likely going to talk about switching out this UBS account to APCM. They don't have any other municipalities or manage any other municipality money. So kind of look at changing that. The permanent fund has excelled over the last couple of years. In fiscal year 2020, this was 8.7 million. It increased to 10.6 in 2021. And then recently over the last 6 months, we've seen a $351,000 change. And that is primarily because you have equity exposure. The assembly has provided that we were able to have 65% US equity exposure in the permanent fund. So obviously those returns have been noted there. So kind of summarizing our asset composition here. Right now we have 39.7 million in borough assets. That's changed since 6/30 by approximately 3.3 million. And that's mainly because we collect our property tax revenues on October 15th. And then, sales tax kind of keeps us afloat throughout the year after that major income source. So kind of commented on most of those notable changes there. Moving forward, we really want to work as an investment committee to build up the permanent fund. I really think that should be the mindset. And whether that's, in the form of quarterly contributions or even annual contributions, I think the mindset should really be to create a long-term investment plan for the permanent fund. And we want to get to a point where, 30 years down the road, that's a $50 million permanent fund that we got, $5 million of investment income every year we can draw for capital projects. I mean, that'd be a dream for the city of Wrangell. So the second mission, and I've talked about this with the investment committee who meets tomorrow about an operating capital account. This is basically investing enterprise reserves with broader exposure to market risk. So basically being able to invest the water fund reserves into an index fund with restrictions, of course. We don't want to invest the entire enterprise fund reserve in index funds or something like that, but we want to set predetermined thresholds and maybe have a little bit of exposure. That way we're not gaining 0.05 interest on a CD that expires monthly. So those are kind of some targets that I know that me, Patty, Ann, Jeff, and Sam Persunk are working on in the investment committee. But yeah, that's kind of a composition of our assets right now. And here's a kind of a note on our HRA checking account. I found this really fascinating. So this is our health reimbursement account. Basically, about 4 years back, we changed insurance policies to allow for kind of this buffer. So the employee pays a $1,000 deductible. The city will pay the next $2,000, so $3,000 in total. Adopting this plan basically saved the borough $324,000 on an annual basis. So substantial cost savings. And why this works is we have such low utilization of this health reimbursement account. Like the claims for a given year are very underutilized. So, you know, utilization in 2020 was 14,672, really low. 2021 was $9,157. So we're saving a ton of money on this HRA checking account approach. And we've even talked about extending it. So it's maybe a one in a $5,000 threshold. So, you know, more cost savings to definitely take advantage of. And I've scheduled a preliminary kind of insurance renewal conversation with PW and APEI in March with you guys. So hopefully that adds some color there on some opportunities for cost savings and insurance. Here's the investment code. So per 502050, the city and borough investment code investments, other than those housed in the permanent fund, are currently restricted to treasury bills, federal, state, or municipal bonds, FDIC insured CDs. The permanent fund can be invested per those asset classes at those thresholds noted in this table down here. The goal of a code revision, which would be kind of spurred by the investment committee, is just broader exposure, kind of like I said earlier. We want to be able to expose our reserves to a little bit more market risk and gain healthier returns in a low income or a low interest rate environment, which we're currently experiencing. The way our money's parked right now, we're losing money in real terms. So we want to be able to do something about that in the future. And like I said, you know, basically setting thresholds and practicing prudence is the key if we're going to go down this route. But you know, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on if anybody would be opposed to a code revision. I know it hasn't been done in quite a while, but I'd be curious to hear the rest of the assembly's thoughts on this at all. So.
Does anybody want to make a comment on that?
Well, we've talked about this in meetings, and I think it's something we really do need to explore. And if it's doable, I think we would be smart to accept a little bit more risk for a greater return.
Yeah, and like I said, I think the key is just setting prudent thresholds.
I agree with Ann. I think there's definitely ways that you can insulate yourself while still trying to maximize and take advantage of some of the gains that the market can provide, and take a look at some instruments that are available. So yeah, I agree. I would like to see the investment committee bring some ideas forward to the assembly, and we can have a discussion on the risks and the upside and the downside. One of the things that we have on our side is a time horizon. You know, we're not talking about having to pull funds out in 2 years or 3 years or 1 year. We have time where you can wait a market out if you do have a downturn, and that's something that's positive. So,
yeah, no, the code's basically giving us the tools to maybe be able to make decisions at the right time. So, right, you know, obviously the broader markets have experienced a correction this last month. It would be prudent, you know, if we added to our permanent fund right now or an operating capital account, it'd just be smart to kind of, you know, kind of do a cost weighted average. But anyway, that's kind of the goals of the division. Kind of moving on, we're going to get into the core of tonight, which is the health of the enterprise funds. We're going to break each of the five down, and I'll kind of shed some light on the reserve forecasts and kind of historical performance and what we can expect in the future. To be able to keep these fiscally sustainable. So again, we have five enterprise funds. We have the electric fund, we have water, sewer, sanitation, and then Port and Harbors. Supposed to be fiscally sustainable with minimal support from other funds. Kind of focusing on factors we as government officials can control. You know, obviously user fees and rates are something we can control, and operating expenses. Anything outside of those kind of general categories is outside of our control. So when we look at policy, those are kind of the two things we're really looking at. You know, we want to kind of really develop a proactive mindset rather than a reactive mindset, which I truly do believe we're at a turning point with that in this administration. We got new leadership, culture's changing, we've identified problems, we got good targeted solutions, and if we don't, we're going to come up with them. So I really feel positive about the future for these enterprise funds, especially if we take action in the subsequent months. So here's the water fund. This is kind of a general overview of how we performed over the last, 7 years, and kind of an average profitability. So you can see the water fund's incredibly inconsistent. This is largely due to repairs and maintenance account and your operating expenses. So, you know, we didn't plan on something breaking and we spend, you know, an extra $150,000 that year on the repairs and maintenance account. You know, the other thing is our water treatment plant, which is really kind of a crazy anomaly, is it fully depreciated in 2020. So that just means our accounting was really, really good on that, because here we're thinking about building a new one. So you'll notice that $240,000 decrease right there in depreciations from the water treatment plant. So you'll notice that's a change in profitability. But basically, one way to read it, you know, if you kind of having trouble reading this, is, you know, here's our revenues from operations, operating expenses, including depreciation. So of course, depreciation is not a cash expenditure. It's not something, you know, we record it as an accounting concept, but it's not something that actually we pay out. So we add that back, and this is overall our profit down here. Non-operating revenues, those are going to be things like PERS on behalf and possible, you know, like for the electric fund, it'd be like SEPA dividends and those investment income, that kind of stuff. So average profitability in the water fund over a 7-year term was $123,000. That's really poor when you think about some of these capital expenditures we have coming down the road, like a water treatment plant, metering, reservoir bypass, dam stabilization, all that kind of stuff. So here's kind of a forecast of water fund reserves over the next 30 years. This is assuming we increase rates by 2% every year. So essentially, I trended operating revenues and expenses at 2% every year, and therefore profit. So right now, our water fund reserve is $676,000. We'll get another 53 grand out of the DEC from our water mains project that we have fully completed. They're withholding that $52,000 until we pass our fiscal year 21 audit, and then they'll remit that to us. So, you know, once we get that, we'll be at around 720 altogether. You know, reserves alone, just looking at this, you know, in 30 years, you'll have 5.7 million roughly. You know, the reserves alone aren't going to be enough to cover capital expenditures, extensive grant funding, state sponsored loan programs, revenue bonds. Those are the type of things we're going to have to go after for some of these bigger water projects, because it's certainly not going to be our reserves. But it does call for kind of a change to our rates. And I know we're going to talk a lot more about the water treatment plant tonight, but, you know, I can kind of talk a bit about the water fund rate structure. It's really complex and it's not standardized. If you look at that section of the code, and I'd pull it up, but you guys can look at it too separately, but essentially there's 42 different water rates. Obviously we're concerned the most with the residential and meter rate of $47.15 a month, but the fact that we have 42 different water rates assigned to consumers in our code's absolutely ridiculous. I don't think it's been tracked consistently over the past couple decades. So I would really suggest a consolidated rate structure, maybe like 4 different tiers for unmetered, and then we have a pretty good metered part in our code right now, but you know, kind of rethinking that would be pretty good. Looking at residential rates, they'd have to increase from $47.15 to $56.07 to pay off the $3.8 million loan that we're going to talk about tonight for the USDA water treatment plant loan. So essentially, if we to fully pay off the loan as it's amortized, that is the increase that needs to happen currently. So kind of looking at it, you know, a little bit of above or a little below $9 to $10. You know, it's also a provision in the loan agreement that with the USDA that water rates on an annualized basis must be 1.5% of the median household income within 2 years of the water treatment plant construction. So 1.5% of our median household income is calculated right there. It's $62.99 monthly. So regardless, even if we were just trying to pay off the loan with the metrics I laid out right there, we still have to be at $62.99 by 2 years as provided by the USDA. That's just kind of a financial covenant for loan. Anybody have any questions on the water fund at all?
You say there's 42 different water rates?
There is.
Yeah.
Is 47.15 the low end of that?
47.15 is the main water rate because most of our consumers are getting that residential and meter rate. But we have rates laid out for bakeries and, you know, the hospital and grocery stores. And I mean, there's every different type of business is pretty much on that rate schedule. And so I'd really recommend kind of a four-tiered approach whereby we say, you know, tier one's our lowest users, those are our residential users. And then we build back up to like tier four, which would be like, you know, the cold storage and the fish plants and those kind of things. So, but obviously that's a bad example because the fish plants are metered. So
their rates would also go up exponentially, just like
they would. So that 47.15 to 56.07, that's a 21% increase. Mm-hmm. We'd like to probably trend all those tiers. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah. Anybody else got any
questions? Anybody know when the last time was that water rates were increased?
2019.
Oh, okay.
So was the
somewhere in the back of my mind, I thought there had been a raise, but I couldn't remember. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Going into Port and Harbor, fund analysis. Port's a little bit more refreshing. You got a little bit better average profitability year over year. You'll see such as, you know, kind of a stark, a big spark in 2020. That's due to deferred Shoemaker grant revenue and the amount of $694 being recognized. Port revenue in 21 was down 51% due to lack of cruise ships. State raw fish tax revenue decreased over $80,000. That's a non-operating revenue item. So we've seen a pretty big decrease in profit in 2021. As you can see, we also started depreciating a few more things in 21. So we added back a little bit more depreciation, but generally $713,000 in profit every year. So when you forecast reserves starting at $3.591 million, that's what we have today in the Port Harbor Reserve. Those are what you get in the respective sub funds, I guess you could call them, in the Port Harbor. So remember, we got the harbors, we have the port, and then we have the Marine Service Center. And I'll just say that the reserve accounting in the harbor was really misconstrued over the term the Shoemaker Harbor project. And so we need to kind of rethink how we're allocating those reserves, I suppose, because the allocations really got kind of messed up when the Shoemaker project went on. So this is a reserve allocation based off of 50% going to the harbor, 35% going to the Marine Service Center, and 15% going to the port. You also know that the Myers Check reserve is going to be accounted for in the harbor sub fund. But this is considering a 2% increase on operating revenues and operating expenses over each year. So in 30 years, we'll have $32.5 million. If, you know, obviously that's not including capital expenditures. And then, you know, in today's dollars, that's only $18 million. So it really calls for kind of a rate overhaul, I would suppose. Steve's going to talk to you guys tonight about the Marine Service Center rate study. That really demonstrated that's the weak spot of Port and Harbors. We're definitely not capitalizing on the Marine Service Center. For the harbor itself, I think just a 2% annually increase would be the recommended approach there. We're generally doing all right. So just kind of keeping up with inflation year over year would probably be the best approach. Going to the Marine Service Center, though, that's probably the biggest concern. This is a part of the rate study, and maybe you guys will see this in your packet or you already read it, but this is return on an investment in the Marine Service Center if we were to trend it out right now. And essentially what this is saying is for every dollar we invest, we're getting 78 cents in return. So we're essentially losing money on the Marine Service Center. which is a really sad reality considering that that facility is, we have a really competitive advantage to exploit there. You know, there's no services, in other areas that offer the services that we do. So I think we, we rethink those rates in the Marine Service Center. You know, business leases were 200% below market, short and long-term lease, or short and long-term storage are well below 50% of market. Haul out rates again, right, 40-something percent out of market. So all those things need to be adjusted. I know that I talked with the Port Commission with Steve and kind of going to draft a proposal, I think, for you guys to look at. But I'm excited to get a return out of the Marine Service Center because it really is a unique part of this town, and we're not taking advantage of it right now.
And could I ask that you just mute yourself so that, because when you cough into your mic there, it just
blows. Oh, sorry.
Moving on to the electric fund. This is Wrangell Municipal Light and Power. Kind of a chart there, a simple graph on profitability year over year. Average profitability is about $525,000. I don't anticipate that in the future years, given we used to get a pretty sizable SEPA dividend. And Steve, you can add some color to that if you'd like, but that's going to be a non-operating revenue item. They see down in this line back in 2018, this was a big SEPA dividend year, and so was 2017, 2016. So we kind of got away from that in 2020 and 2021. But essentially, you can expect on average $525,000 taken in. You guys increased kilowatt hour sales to by a penny. That should be a 3.61% dollars increase in operating revenues over the next 5 months, because that's when it'll be effective. It was about 8%, a little under 8%, but given it's 5 out of 12, that's why it's 3.61% towards operating revenues. So that's something you'll kind of enjoy over the next 5 months. Current cash reserve in the electric fund is 3.154 million, trended 30 years at 2% overall, going to be 17 million in 30 years, which is $9.4 million in today's dollars. So I think so long as the borough matches SEPA rate increases, the electric fund reserve will maintain a fairly healthy balance. I think that my major concerns are water, sewer, and sanitation. We can talk about that more towards the end of the presentation. I'll let you guys draw your own conclusions, but I think electric's, largely all right. We got multiple generator center section overhauls, AMI metering to do, new software, improvements to the distribution infrastructure. So we do have quite a few capital projects, but I'm excited to basically create a massive Excel for each of these enterprise funds during the budgeting cycle and see how our reserve bill can address those or cannot. So this is kind of those initial conversations.
Yeah, Mason, that's my fear here is that, in 30 years, everybody's going, wow, that's a lot of money. But I know, given the infrastructure issues, that's why there is no more money coming from SEPA, is because for the exact same capital reasons we have problems in our funds or in our departments, we had to take those dividends and put them towards the aging infrastructure. So, that's going to be the interesting secret sauce here, is what is the capital expense and how's that going to diminish these reserves at the end of the day?
You bet. No, this is definitely kind of the conversation starter. And then as I'll show you in the budgeting timeline, kind of that's when we're going to be showing all those capital expenditures modeled out and what reserves will be. This just really paints a picture of, for all of our enterprise fund, our reserves really aren't that healthy moving forward, because it doesn't take a whole lot to wipe out that 17 million 30 years from now, especially in those dollar terms. That's those infrastructure improvements to increase from 8 megawatts to 12 megawatts. I don't know what that'll cost. I don't know what we ever got estimates on it, but probably pretty sizable. And I know the center section overall is probably going to be 450 to 500 a whack. So you can see how that reserve balance will deteriorate pretty quickly. So that's the electric fund. Here's the sewer fund, probably your most consistent fund, as you'll find. So As you can kind of see by that graph, rates have not increased since 2015, 6.5 years. It's also one of the you know, least profitable in terms of what you're taking home at the end of the day. So $186,000 on average over the last 7 years. Depreciation has diminished due to assets becoming fully obviously depreciated. But yeah, I think it's concerning that sewer rates haven't looked at for 6.5 years. I think it'd be generally a good practice to increase those 2% year over year and kind of coincide those rate increases with water. You're going to see that, you know, if we ever go try to get funding through the USDA, they're going to have the same requirements of, you know, our sewer rates being at one of the, you know, a certain percentage of median household income. So being prepared to address those provisions in a loan agreement is important. So here's the current cash reserve for the sewer fund. We got 1.3 million, you know, trended over 30 years. It'll be 8.8 or 4.8 in today's dollars. So, you know, a secondary treatment of wastewater will be required by the state within 5 years. That's your biggest project coming down the road. Clearly those reserve balance aren't gonna address that. So, you know, likely going to have to look at grant or revenue bonding for a project of that size. So, you know, we can look at rate structures as we go along in addressing that project, but I generally think those rate increases should coincide with water. That's sewer. And if you guys have any questions on sewer, happy to answer. And then sanitation. So pretty inconsistent here. Again, it's due to kind of repairs and maintenance over the years not being accurately forecasted or anticipated. We kind of just break down and address it. And so you can see, like in 2015, that was a good example of, we obviously broke something there and threw it in the repairs and maintenance account. And, you know, I think with all our enterprise funds, we really want to be consistent as possible. Profit has decreased from 21.35% in 2019 to 3.67% as a proportion of revenue. That's mainly operating expenses increasing, revenues staying stagnant for the most part. So if we go over to our forecasting model, we have $431,000, which is our lowest cash reserve balance for the sanitation fund. That is why I think you guys were talking about potentially gifting the sales tax funds transferred over to the sanitation department, because clearly the fund really can't afford to pay that back and then also address capital expenditures in the future, new scales, problems with the baler, you know, building maintenance, all that stuff's going to add up, new garbage trucks, which are, I think they're 10 to 12 years old already. Those kind of things are coming up, and that reserve balance is really concerning. So a rate overhaul is strongly recommended for the sanitation fund. And I think the sooner the better there. To add some color, here's Petersburg sanitation rates compared to ours. Obviously they start off on a 32 gallon size container, but you can see per gallon, they start way higher than us, and they kind of demonstrate an economies of scale. So it's decreasing over time or over the size of the container, which is the right way to do things. We kind of start lower, come up, and then come back down for whatever reason. But you can see with compared to Petersburg, we're way behind on our rates, which is really concerning. And I understand that they have a recycling function in their sanitation department. These rates probably somewhat subsidize that, but we're way behind, and this is just a good demonstration of that. So that's kind of the segment on the health of our enterprise funds. If you have any questions, happy to answer. If not, I'll just kind of roll into sales tax performance.
Questions for Mason?
Okay.
Not seeing any, Mason. I think you can continue on.
Yeah, sales tax performance. This is some good news. Budgeted versus actual over the last five years, is that 2021? Yeah. So basically, you can see that we've kind of trended upwards over the last 5 years, which is pretty exciting. This last year, we took in $3.264 million in sales tax, You know, about 180,000, that's Alaska Rural Sales Tax Commission money received, but looks a bit like economic expansion to me, and hopefully we won't get into a contractionary environment. But we only budgeted, I think, 1.88 million for sales tax. I think that the borough anticipated COVID really adversely affecting our sales tax fund, but when in fact it had kind of the opposite effect. So really pleased to present a positive sales tax return this year, this in fiscal year 21. More recently, in Q1 of 22, so from June to September, we had the highest recorded sales tax in borough history, so $844,000, $845,000. So that's a positive note. Q2 sales tax is due January 31st, so that's coming right up. And then this is a bit of a sales tax projection based off of different policies. So Callie Miller started as our sales tax and our sales and property tax borough clerk, and I thank you guys again for that position. It's already really paying off. So one of the things I had her do is kind of scan all our remittances for the last five quarters. And in fiscal year 21, we had gross sales in our community recorded by businesses of 53.4 million. If we had a 7% sales tax, which we currently do with no cap, that would be 3.7 million or 3.741 million with no cap. Currently, we have a $3,000 cap, which is the orange one right there, 7% with a $3,000 cap. That's what we returned in fiscal year 21 with that existing policy. And then a 5% with no cap, 2.672 million. This just kind of gives you a kind of general sense of what would happen on, with respect to policy changes. My major concern with sales tax moving forward is we're going to have to find out a way to fund the school when the SRS funding runs out. The National Forest Receipts Program has kind of diminished over the last few years. They've extended it, but our local contribution is 1.3 million every year. And so I'm worried that we're going to get to a point where in 2026, our SRS funds are going to be fully diminished, and we're going to have to find a way to contribute to the school. So I'll kind of go into that real briefly. So this
Mason,
is,
sorry.
Mason, oh yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Can you go back to that last slide?
You bet.
You said 7% on overall of 53 million. So if there was no cap on that, that would be 7% of 53 million, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Because that should be 35 million net or whatever it is. And then if you had 7%, like I didn't understand that.
So if you
7%
have
with no cap on $53 million in total sales would be 7% to 53 million.
Right. 7%. Does that check out?
You have 7% with no cap with 3,741,000. Then 7% with a cap is 3,264,000. I don't understand how that worked.
Well, but that should check out, and unless I'm thinking about it wrong, but 7% with no cap is basically a 7% times is 53.4 million. And 7%.
Sorry, 53 with no cap would be 7% of 53 million.
Yes, because this is gross sales recorded by businesses. So these are the gross sales of all the businesses in the borough that we're taxing. So if there's not a $3,000 cap on that or a $3,000 exemption amount, we can assume that full 53 million is taxable.
Right. So that would be 7% of 53 million, which is not 3 million.
7% of it. 7% of $53 million is $3.7 million.
That's right.
Correct.
I just did it on the calculator.
Yeah.
And how is 7% of, with the cap, $3 million?
That means, Steve, is that there was not a lot of after, you don't have a lot of large sales.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Sales. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there wasn't a lot of large sales. Oh, I see what you're saying.
So saying is there's only... The way I read this is only about $500,000 that's not taxed after the cap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dave's exactly right.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That makes sense. I was not computing for me.
Yeah, I apologize. You know, part of the confusion is this is our current policy, 7% with a $3,000 cap. And this is exactly what we returned in fiscal year 21. So that's the most accurate representation of that policy. So sorry, but yes, Dave's exactly right. This is the disparity between businesses that are having transactions above a $3,000 invoice. So
okay, perfect. Thank you. That makes sense now to me. Sorry.
No, you're all good. I'm going to try to rush through the remainder here. This is our Secure and Rural Schools Fund. Basically, we contribute $1.3 million to the school district as of right now. These are our national forest receipts that we've received that go into the Secure Rural School Fund. In 22, we completely made our local contribution out of the Secure Rural Schools Fund per your guys' budget. Essentially, at the end of this year, we'll have a fund balance in the Secure Rural School Fund of $1.9 million. Over the next 5 years, it's going to be negative. So, like I said, we're going to have to figure out a new approach to funding the school, because we can't just rely solely on national forest receipts to fund the schools unless we reduce the contribution or we take some from the sales tax. So this is halfway through the year. We haven't paid them out the other $650,000 that we've made the first contribution, but we haven't made the second $650,000 for the $1.3 million. And we also haven't received our national forest receipt yet. That's due in April. So those are the changes that will occur in this column, which overall will result in a $1.9 million balance here. And this is kind of what I mean by fund balance and net assets. This is your unrestricted reserve in a fund, is the total net assets right here. So that's kind of what I talk about when I say it's really not reserve, it's fund balance or unrestricted net assets.
Are you hearing word that they're not going to fund us with the Secure Rural Schools?
So they are going to continue to extend the funding for the next 5 years. But the reality is it's not funding our total contribution right now. So after 5 years, we don't know what it's going to look like. I would anticipate they still subsidize it in some sort. But right now, we're not keeping up with our contribution. So the Secure Rural Schools Fund balance is really diminishing year over year. It might be a thing where the borough wants to look at, throwing 25% to the Secure Rural Schools Fund every year from sales tax, or maybe a percentage of the mill rates, something of that sort, because this thing is going to deplete really quickly. And then we're going to kind of be in a position in 2026, well, what do we do? So I just wanted to bring that to light for you guys. I think this will be a hot topic this year as the school begins their budgeting.
So, well, Mason, it's only been the last 2 or 3 years that we funded the school solely out of SRS.
Okay.
In the past, we've taken, I always remember $855,000 out of our sales tax, and then the remainder out of SRS.
Okay, that helps me too. I don't have the historical context there, but
right.
I guess my point is it's not a healthy thing to take all of it out of the Secure Rural Schools Fund. I don't know why that was budgeted that way. I'm sure there was a reason, but I think that would be a way better approach, Patty, in the future here, is to kind of take that balance that,
We also were looking for schools to ensure that we weren't depleting our reserves while building there. So that was something else we looked at. So you, Brian, you have your hand up?
No, I didn't know that we were taking all of our contribution this year from SRS. I thought that was over the last year, like it was over that 1 year. I thought it was a split this year. That's a surprise for me.
Yep, no, it was budgeted that way, so we kind of executed it out that way. But I think it's a good thing to rethink here in the budgeting cycle. Got new leadership in the school, new leadership in the borough. I'm excited about the prospects of that, and hopefully a brighter future for Wrangell Public School District. So I'm going to move on to accounts receivable. I'm kind of running out of time, so I'm going to try to rush through this last portion here. This is an accounts receivable update. Here's a really ugly slide I put together, but it does kind of justice. Harbor accounts receivable as of 12/31 is $104,000. 105,000 rather. Last year at this time, it was 168,000. That reduction is largely due to some write-offs that the assembly passed in the amount of 67,000 in November that have basically delinquent accounts that we are now collecting on at the collection agency level. Those things were sitting in there forever, so we cleared that out. And then this bottom picture right here, this is our accounts receivable for utilities. This is an aging schedule. We have 419,000 in current receivables. What's really interesting, and you don't see this very often, but this is our aging schedule, and you got a negative balance, a credit balance in the 30s and 60 days column. That's because we have so many utilities that are subsidized in the city of Wrangell. These are all subsidies coming from the Alaska Energy Authority, low-income housing, water funding from the state for low-income households. So we have an astonishing amount of our utilities that are subsidized by state and federal grant agencies. That's why you see those balances as negative. Sherry, our utilities clerk, has been working in the borough for about 8-9 years. She says this is the lowest kind of snapshot we've had in history. So I'm really happy about that moving forward. And I know you had your hand up. Did you have a question at all?
I was just going to comment that we have to be aware if this land exchange goes through with the tribe, we are going to lose more forest receipts.
Oh, that's a great point. You know, I definitely think you can count on those diminishing year over year.
That's just something to, yeah.
Yeah.
No, we have definitely asked to be reimbursed for those as a part of the exchange.
Yeah.
No, that's a great observation, Anne. So thanks for pointing that out. This is kind of the last main item, which is our budget timeline. I'm going to send this to Kim and she's going to disperse it to all of you guys. But essentially, this is kind of the timeline that that me and Jeff kind of developed. And basically, we're going to start by sending out workbooks to each of the directors. They'll have 1 month to budget for each of their departments and enterprise funds. We'll kind of regroup and create a first draft of the budget. Some notable points, you know, in March, I really want to have an insurance work session with the assembly. I know Tom Radke's like really excited for that. I can see he's excited for insurance. And then APCM is our investment work session with the assembly. I'd like to do that in March as well. Hoping to have everything done by the close of May, and then we can float into June. Feeling pretty good, but I'll send this all to you guys. I mean, you can kind of scan it thoroughly. And then I'm happy to answer any questions there on the budget calendar for 23.
Excellent, Mason. So first of all, thank you so much. That was an excellent presentation. We really, really appreciate all the work you put into that. I know I see your vehicle at City Hall every weekend. So I would imagine you've been polishing this presentation a fair bit. So thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions on anything, the calendar, anything at all for Mason?
I just have a quick question. Mason, sorry. What time is our meeting tomorrow?
Yeah, meeting tomorrow is at 3:00 with the investment committee.
That's what I thought, but I just wanted to double check. Thank you.
No, thanks. Yeah, Jim, what you got?
Just real quick, where are we on those entitlement lands?
That's a great question. You know, I don't know if Carol's joining tonight in the assembly meeting, but
hold on. I'm going to actually hold on that. We'll get to that one later. Let's just stick to the presentation. That really wasn't part of tonight. I think we'll hold on that till we can do that at a later time. We'll stick with what the financial packet here for right now. Let's go to, do you have another question for him on what he presented tonight, Jim? No? Okay. Anybody else questions on the presentation tonight? All right. Well, we've got 5 minutes, so we'll take a break then. Again, thanks so much for your presentation, Mason. We really appreciate it. And we will adjourn out of this workshop at 6:55. And we'll meet back up in the Zoom room at 7 p.m. for our regular assembly meeting.